Good morning and welcome to a special KPFA live broadcast of the Senate impeachment trial of President Donald J. Trump, who has been impeached by the House of Representatives for abuse of power and obstruction of justice. I'm Mitch Jezerich, and we will be bringing you live coverage of the Senate impeachment trial that gets underway just any minute from now. Now, last week, Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, John Roberts of the Supreme Court, was sworn in to preside over the trial, and then John Roberts in turn swore in all 100 senators as jurors who took an oath of impartiality, something that is already in question. Today, the Senate will debate the rules of the trial. Now, the proposed rules that were released by Senate Majority Republican Leader Mitch McConnell of Kentucky last night has angered Democrats. Just moments ago, Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer of New York said that these proposed rules actually mark one of the darkest moments in Senate history. Now, the rules are as follows. And again, we are expecting this to get underway any moment now. But the rules are as follows. First, that both the House floor managers who will serve as the prosecution will have 24 hours to make their case. But they have to use those 24 hours in 2 days, Wednesday and Thursday, which means that they would go for 12 hours each, which means that each day on East Coast time, the trial is going to begin at 1 p.m. Eastern, which is 10 a.m. Our time right now, which would mean that if there are breaks, that the trial could in this week could go into 2-3 o'clock in the morning. Then the House defense team, President Trump's defense team would then also have the same conditions, likely on Friday and Saturday. They would have 24 hours over 2 days to make their case against impeachment. Then there will be a period of 16 hours in which senators will get to ask questions via the via John Roberts. So they would write down their questions to John Roberts. After those 16 hours are done, then the Senate would vote both on whether or not to have witnesses and whether or not to admit the evidence that was found in the House trial. Now, for more on all of this, I'm joined on the telephone by Craig Holman. Craig Holman is public citizens, government affairs lobbyist, and expert on ethics, lobbying, and campaign finance rules. Craig Holman, thank you for your time.
Glad to be here, Mitch.
Of course, we don't know how much time we'll have until the trial gets underway. But, Craig, your reaction to the proposed rules that they're going to debate and work on today, vote on by the end of today for this impeachment trial?
They're right in the middle of it. Both Mitch McConnell and Chuck Schumer gave introductory comments already. And now the Senate's gone into recess waiting for Justice Roberts to take the chair and then call the whole session back to order. The rules are really tainted to make this trial go very fast, to make it go really into the dark of the night, to exclude the American public from the proceedings going on here. Even though Mitch McConnell offered the rules as saying he's following the 1999 Clinton format, which tended to be very open and went on for about 5 weeks or so, this is nothing of the sort. Even though Mitch McConnell has borrowed the 24-hour limit for both the House managers and the White House managers, he's condensed it into 2 days each, and which means that, as you pointed out, these proceedings are going to go well into 2-3 in the morning East Coast time, which just, will not be on anyone's television set anywhere. So it isn't as if the public is going to be much of much party to this whole impeachment trial. It really is designed to put the trial into the dark of the night.
You also have to wonder
everything up and get it over.
You also have to wonder what that will mean for senators. It's interesting, the rules for the senators. They won't be able to speak during the trial at all. And if they ever do debate anything, it'll be behind closed doors because it'll be considered deliberations by the Senate jury, which since this is a trial. But what that means for somebody to have to, they can't take their phones into the Senate chamber with them. They can't talk to each other while they're in the Senate chamber. I mean, you even hear that they could actually be under arrest and taken to jail if they were to break the decorum rules of the actual trial. So what that actually means to be able to sit there for 12 hours and just comprehend everything that's being said.
And from what I know of senators, that's got to kill them. I mean, they actually sit there.
But I think that would kill most people, right? I mean, my understanding is trials usually go 6-7 hours, not 12 hours.
Yeah, 12 hours is unconscionable. You know, even during the 16 hours of Q&A, which they're going to condense into probably 2 days, even the questions that senators ask, they don't actually ask them themselves. They send notes up to Justice Roberts to ask for them. So, the Senate is supposed to act in a very solemn fashion and be very silent and sit there and judge the merits of the evidence. And then they go into closed-door session to debate the merits, and after that they come out with their final votes.
Craig Holman, another important distinction between the rules that have been proposed by Mitch McConnell, and I don't think Mitch McConnell would have brought these rules to the floor today if he didn't think he had the 51 votes needed to pass it. Another distinction between these rules and what happened in 1999, and again, important to point out, Mitch McConnell all along has said that he would basically go by what happened in 1999 with Bill Clinton. Mitch McConnell also said that on Fox News with Sean Hannity that he would be taking his cues from the White House concerning the trial. It looks like that actually did occur. Another important distinction, though, that I want to get to in these rules is in 1999, all the evidence that was presented in the House of Representatives and that also Ken Starr, who was the press special prosecutor at the time, had concerning Bill Clinton was admitted right at the top of the trial. Here, the rules say that the evidence concerning Donald Trump and the, I guess we call it the Ukraine caper, will not be officially in the Senate record until after the oral arguments occur and after the senators get the opportunity to ask their questions. It will then be voted on by the Senate whether or not to admit the evidence that the House of Representatives found in its impeachment inquiry. What does that mean? Because I'm trying to figure out. The first thing I thought in my head was, well, wait a minute. Does this mean that in the oral arguments that they can even refer to the evidence?
Well, in the oral arguments, they will be referring to the evidence, but whether or not the evidence gets submitted in print for the senators to actually judge, that won't happen until after there is an actual vote for submission of the evidence. This is highly unprecedented, as you're pointing out. You know, according to the Clinton trial, it was automatic that any of the evidence that the House had used for the impeachment was automatically submitted in writing to every senator. Not only that, but then beyond the automatic submission of evidence, any new evidence that the managers wanted to bring in was also submitted into the trial. And furthermore, testimony was accepted. Even though they did not bring in new testimony orally before the Senate, they did bring them in as depositions and then made the discussions in those depositions public, not just to the Senate, but to the whole nation as well. The rules that Mitch McConnell are proposing, first of all, no automatic submission of the evidence in writing to the Senate, and it actually forbids any new evidence unless the Senate votes by a majority to approve any new evidence and new testimony.
Now, those are two different things. Those are two different things. The first one meaning what was discovered in the House impeachment inquiry. The second one would be which you're talking about, new evidence, would be everything that we've learned since Donald Trump had been impeached.
And evidence that was not accessible to the House during the impeachment hearing. That includes all the appeals the House made for emails within the Department of State, within the Department of Defense, within the White House itself, on the whole matter dealing with the Ukraine. Trump ordered all these agencies to just lock down the evidence and not share it with the House impeachment managers. So they are asking, or Senator Schumer at this point, is asking for that evidence to also be introduced. You know, think about it. I mean, this is a trial. The impeachment was sort of like a grand jury that found that there is sufficient evidence to conduct a trial. The trial itself is supposed to use all the evidence available to determine guilt or innocence. And Mitch McConnell is pretty well rigging this trial, so the evidence will be difficult to be had.
I want to say, I'm sorry.
There are a couple swing Republican votes that may yet open up the trial to new evidence and new testimony. Schumer and the Democrats would have to get four Republicans to cross over in order to open up the trial to that. And that remains to be seen whether that'll happen.
So let's talk a little more about this new evidence that's out there. First, there were the emails that you referenced between the Department of Defense and the Office of Management and Budget, in which was discovered by the Center for Public Integrity that they obtained through a FOIA request that showed that the Department of Defense was worried about violating what's known as the Impoundment Control Act of 1974. This act basically says you have to spend the money that Congress appropriates for. You can't hold it back for policy reasons. You can if there are programmatic reasons, meaning that you find something wrong or some conditions aren't particularly met. But for policy, because you disagree with a policy, that you can't withhold money that Congress appropriates to particular programs. And then what is also in question in that vein of what would be allowed as new evidence is late last week, the Government Accountability Office, which is part of Congress, a bipartisan agency that, you know, looks for, problems within government, reported that the Office of Management and Budget, which within the White House, did violate that law, the Impoundment Control Act of 1974. It's possible that that report wouldn't be a part of the evidence, isn't it?
That is correct. The GAO report came out after the impeachment hearing. And so the GAO report is not included in the body of evidence that the Senate can consider in determining guilt or innocence, along with those emails that you mentioned, and actually a number of documents and interactions between the various agencies that were made during the course of this entire scandal. And then on top of it all, we've got, you know, news statements coming out from people like Lev Parnas, and none of that will be submissible either, although the Democrats haven't even yet asked for that. So we're just looking at a Senate that really just wants to put on blinders when it comes to trying to determine guilt or innocence in this trial.
Yes, Lev Parnas. If we're going to get some good TV out of this, we're going to need Lev Parnas at some point, Craig Holman.
By the way, I suspect we may yet get some good TV out of this, just because Trump has brought in some, you know, new attorneys who really like grandstanding. You know, you got Ken Starr and Dershowitz, and they do like grandstanding. So this could yet be a wild card in this whole process.
Well, Craig, staying on Trump's defense team, and there has been a lot of attention about Alan Dershowitz and Ken Starr, who is the special prosecutor that helped bring the impeachment against Bill Clinton in late 1998. But the two leading members of the defense team are going to be the White House counsel, Cipollone, and also Jay Cipollone, and also Jay Sekulow. And Cipollone and Sekulow, in some ways, have also, in their own way, have very much been a part of these controversies. Sekulow's name has been brought up even by Lev Parnas as potentially having a role in the whole pressure campaign against Ukraine. And Pat Cipollone, the White House counsel, has been the one front and center keeping and justifying why no documents or witnesses were made available to the House impeachment process.
It certainly is amazing, isn't it, that the attorneys who are leading the Trump defense could, in fact, be witnesses providing evidence for the prosecutors. That really just shows what sort of a circus of a trial we're going into at this point. You know, and then go back to the basically the TV stars, Alan Dershowitz and Ken Starr. I mean, both of these guys are surrounded in controversy themselves. You know, Alan Dershowitz has been a good friend of Jeffrey Epstein. He was the defense attorney for Weinstein. Ken Starr had to resign from Baylor University because of allegations that he didn't follow up on sex scandals. So we've got all the makings for an excellent television show. Too bad it's going to be happening in the dead of night.
Yeah, well, not all of it, but for you it will be, being on the East Coast. I mean, really, when these oral arguments begin, and this is one of the first big controversies that we're going to hear a lot about, 12 hours each day for the next 4 days, probably starting tomorrow. So Wednesday through Saturday, Wednesday and Thursday, we'll have 12 hours each day of oral arguments from the Democratic House managers. Now, they don't have to take all 12 hours each day or all 24 hours combined if they don't want to. It's up to them. But they have 2 days to use that time as they see fit. And then on Friday and Saturday, the defense team, Donald Trump's defense team, will also have 24 hours on Friday and Saturday to use. They have already indicated, at least I've seen some reports suggesting, they may not use the entire 24 hours. Craig Holman, I'm a little bit surprised that here we are 18 minutes past the hour since the trial was supposed to begin, that they have literally begun with a in recess. What do you think that's about? Why do you think they're in recess right now?
And I'm still looking at the recess. And to tell the truth, it shows that this trial is going to begin very heated. Right now, they're debating the rules of procedure and whether or not they are going to follow the rules as you have laid them out here. And, you know, Chuck Schumer is fighting hard. I know he's introduced some amendments to open up the books to more evidence as well as witnesses, and they're debating the procedure for determining the procedure, and that's why they're sitting in recess right now.
And the reason they are in recess, and this will be important to note, is that we are not allowed to hear during the trial from the senators. In fact, they are not even allowed to hear from each other or speak during the actual trial. And so if for them to be able to debate the procedure before the procedure, and if that's what they're doing, they have to do this during closed doors. Now, neither of us are just outside the Senate chamber, but is that your sense of what's happening right now?
That's exactly what's happening right now. Schumer and McConnell are duking it out now, and I see they're just about to start. So suspect we're going to get a quick vote on the procedures.
Well, this is John Roberts. Craig Holman, thank you, a public citizen. This is John Roberts.
Yes, thank you, Mitch. Take care.
Raise his right hand and be sworn. Do you solemnly swear that in all things appertaining to the trial of the impeachment of Donald John Trump, President of the United States, now pending, you will do impartial justice according to the Constitution and laws, so help you God?
I do.
The Secretary will note the name of the senator who has just taken the oath and will present the oath book to him for signature. The sergeant-at-arms will make the proclamation.
Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. All persons are commanded to keep silent on pain of imprisonment while the Senate of the United States is sitting for the trial of the articles of impeachment exhibited by the House of Representatives against Donald John Trump, President of the United States.
The majority leader is recognized.
I'd like to state that for the information of all senators, the
Mitch
trial
McConnell.
Briefs filed yesterday by the parties have been printed and are now at each senator's desk.
The following documents will be submitted to the Senate for printing in the Senate Journal. The precept issued January 16, 2020, the writ of summons issued on January 16, 2020, and the receipt of summons dated January 16, 2020. The following documents, which were received by the Secretary of the Senate, will be submitted to the Senate for printing in the Senate Journal pursuant to the order of January 16, 2020. The answer of Donald John Trump, President of the United States, to the articles of impeachment exhibited by the House of Representatives against him on January 16, 2020, received by the Secretary of the Senate on January 18, 2020. The trial brief filed by the House of Representatives, received by the Secretary of the Senate on January 18, 2020. The trial brief filed by the President, received by the Secretary of the Senate on January 20, 2020. The replication of the House of Representatives, received by the Secretary of the Senate on January 20, 2020. And the rebuttal brief filed by the House of Representatives, received by the Secretary of the Senate on January 21, 2020. Now, without objection, the foregoing documents will be printed in the congressional record. I note the presence in the House of the Senate, in the Senate chamber, of the managers on the part of the House of Representatives and counsel for the President of the United States.
Mr. Chief Justice.
The Majority Leader is recognized.
I send to the desk a list of floor privileges for closed sessions. It's been agreed to by both sides. I ask that it be inserted in the record and agreed to by unanimous consent.
Without objection.
For the further information of all senators, I'm about to send a resolution to the desk providing for an outline of the next steps in these proceedings. It will be debatable by parties for 2 hours, equally divided. Senator Schumer will then send an amendment to the resolution to the desk. Once that amendment has been offered and reported, we'll have a brief recess. When we reconvene, Senator Schumer's amendment will be debatable by the parties for 2 hours. Upon the use or yielding back of time, I intend to move to table Senator Schumer's amendment. And so, Mr. Chief Justice, I send a resolution to the desk and ask that it be read.
The clerk will read the resolution.
Senate Resolution 483, to provide for related procedures concerning the articles of impeachment against Donald John Trump, President of the United States. Resolved that the House of Representatives shall file its record with the Secretary of the Senate, which will consist of those publicly available materials that have been submitted to or produced by the House Judiciary Committee, including transcripts of public hearings or markups in any materials printed by the House of Representatives or the House Judiciary Committee pursuant to House Resolution 660. Materials in this record will be admitted into evidence subject to any hearsay, evidentiary, or other objections that the President may make after opening presentations are concluded. All materials filed pursuant to this paragraph shall be printed and made available to all parties. The President and the House of Representatives shall have until 9 a.m. on Wednesday, January 22, 2020, to file any motions permitted under the rules of impeachment, with the exception of motions to subpoena witnesses or documents or any other evidentiary motions. Responses to any such motions shall be filed no later than 11 a.m. on Wednesday, January 22nd.
And what we're listening to right now is the Senate clerk who is reading the resolution that was brought by Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell last night that contains the rules of the Senate trial. Today, the Senate will be debating the rules, but it'll be different. A lot of the debate will be actually happening by the House managers and also President Trump's defense team in this impeachment trial. Democratic Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer will bring his amendments to try to change some of the rules that we had talked about earlier. You're listening to KPFA's live coverage of the Senate impeachment trial. I'm Mitch Jezerich. We will be with this trial throughout the day. We now turn back to the Senate clerk who is reading the resolution.
For a period not to exceed 24 hours over up to 3 session days, each side may determine the number of persons to make its presentation. Upon the conclusion of the president's presentation, senators may question the parties for a period of time not to exceed 16 hours. Upon the conclusion of questioning by the Senate, there shall be 4 hours of argument by the parties, equally divided, followed by deliberation by the Senate, if so ordered under the impeachment rules, on the question of whether it shall be in order to consider and debate under the impeachment rules any motion to subpoena witnesses or documents. The Senate, without any intervening action, motion, or amendment, shall then decide by the yeas and nays whether it shall be in order to consider and debate under the impeachment rules any motion to subpoena witnesses or documents. Following the disposition of that question, other motions provided under the impeachment rules shall be in order. If the Senate agrees to allow either the House of Representatives or the President to subpoena witnesses, the witnesses shall first be deposed, and the Senate shall decide after deposition which witnesses shall testify pursuant to the impeachment rules. No testimony shall be admissible in the Senate unless the parties have had an opportunity to depose such witnesses. At the conclusion of deliberations by the Senate shall vote on each article of impeachment.
The resolution is arguable by the parties for 2 hours equally divided. Mr. Manager Schiff, are you a proponent or opponent of this motion?
Managers are in opposition to this resolution.
Thank you. Mr. Cipollone, are you a proponent or opponent of the motion?
Chief Justice, we are a proponent of the motion.
Then, Mr. Cipollone, your side may proceed first, and we'll be able to reserve rebuttal time if you wish.
Pat Cipollone is the White House counsel, will be leading Trump's defense team. He has also been the person at the center of the White House legal argument for not cooperating with the House impeachment inquiry.
My name is Pat Cipollone. I am here as counsel to the President of the United States. Our team is proud to be here representing President Trump. We support this resolution. It is a fair way to proceed with this trial. It is modeled on the Clinton resolution, which had 100 senators supporting it the last time this body considered an impeachment. It requires the House managers to stand up and make their opening statement and make their case. They have delayed bringing this impeachment to this House for 33 days to this body. And it's time to start with this trial. It's a fair process. They will have the opportunity to stand up and make their opening statement. They will get 24 hours to do that. Then the president's attorneys will have a chance to respond. After that, all of you will have 16 hours to ask whatever questions you have of either side. Once that's finished and you have all of that information, we will proceed to the question of witnesses and some of the more difficult questions that will come before this body. We are in favor of this. We believe that once you hear those initial presentations, the only conclusion will be that the president has done absolutely nothing wrong, and that these articles of impeachment do not begin to approach the standard required by the Constitution, and in fact, they themselves will establish nothing beyond those articles. You look at those articles alone and you will determine that there is absolutely no case. So we respectfully ask you to adopt this resolution so that we can begin with this process. It is long past time to start this proceeding, and we are here today to do it. And we hope that the House managers will agree with us and begin this proceeding today. We reserve the remainder of our time for rebuttal.
And that was Pat Cipollone, White House counsel, making his first argument in favor of the rules by Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell.
Mr. Chief Justice,
we now hear from Democratic Representative Adam Schiff, Chair of the House Intelligence Committee, leader of the floor managers from the House.
To Leader McConnell's resolution. Let me begin by summarizing why. Last week, we came before you to present the articles of impeachment against the President of the United States for only the third time in our history. Those articles charged President Donald John Trump with abuse of power and obstruction of Congress. The misconduct set out in those articles is the most serious ever charged against a president. The first article, abuse of power, charges the president with soliciting a foreign power to help him cheat in the next election. Moreover, it alleges, and we will prove, that he sought to coerce Ukraine into helping him cheat by withholding official acts, two official acts, a meeting that the new president of Ukraine desperately sought with President Trump at the White House to show the world and the Russians in particular that the Ukrainian president had a good relationship with his most important patron, the President of the United States. And even more perniciously, President Trump illegally withheld almost $400 million in taxpayer-funded military assistance to Ukraine, a nation at war with our Russian adversary, to compel Ukraine to help him cheat in the election. Astonishingly, the president's trial brief filed yesterday contends that even if this conduct is proved, that there is nothing that the House or this Senate may do about it. It is the president's apparent belief that under Article 2, he can do anything he wants, no matter how corrupt, outfitted in gaudy legal clothing. And yet, when the founders wrote the impeachment clause, they had precisely this type of misconduct in mind. Conduct that abuses the power of his office for personal benefit, that undermines our national security, that invites foreign interference in our democratic process of an election. It is the trifecta of constitutional misconduct justifying impeachment. In Article 2, the president is charged with other misconduct that would likewise have alarmed the founders: the full, complete, and absolute obstruction of a co-equal branch of government, the Congress, during the course of its impeachment investigation into the president's own misconduct. This is every bit as destructive of our constitutional order as the misconduct charged in the first article. If a president can obstruct his own investigation, if he can effectively nullify a power the Constitution gives solely to Congress, indeed the ultimate power the Constitution gives to prevent presidential misconduct, then the president places himself beyond accountability, above the law, cannot be indicted, cannot be impeached. It makes him a monarch, the very evil against which our Constitution and the balance of powers it carefully laid out was designed to guard against. Shortly, the trial on these charges will begin, and when it has concluded, you'll be asked to make several determinations. Did the House prove that the president abused his power by seeking to coerce a foreign nation to help him cheat in the next election? And did he obstruct the Congress in its investigation into his own misconduct by ordering his agencies and officers to refuse to cooperate in any way, to refuse to testify, to refuse to answer subpoenas for documents and through every other means? And if the House has proved its case, and we believe the evidence will not be seriously contested, you will have to answer at least one other critical question. does the commission of these high crimes and misdemeanors require the conviction and removal of the president? We believe that it does, and that the Constitution requires that it be so, or the power of impeachment must be deemed a relic or a casualty to partisan times, and the American people left unprotected against a president who would abuse his power for the very purpose of corrupting the only other method of accountability, our elections themselves. And so you will vote to find the president guilty or not guilty, to find his conduct impeachable or not impeachable. But I would submit to you, these are not the most important decisions you will make. How can that be? How can any decision you will make be more important than guilt or innocence, than removing the president or not removing the president? I believe the most important decision in this case is the one you will make today. The most important question is the question you must answer today. Will the president and the American people get a fair trial? Will there be a fair trial? I submit that this is an even more important question than how you vote on guilt or innocence, because whether we have a fair trial will determine whether you have a basis to render a fair and impartial verdict. It is foundational, the structure upon which every other decision you will make must rest. If you only get to see part of the evidence, if you only allow one side or the other a chance to present their full case, your verdict will be predetermined by the bias in the proceeding. If the defendant is not allowed to introduce evidence of his innocence, it's not a fair trial. So too for the prosecution. If the House cannot call witnesses or introduce documents and evidence, it's not a fair trial. It's not really a trial at all. Americans all over the country are watching us right now. And imagine they're on grand jury or they're on jury duty. Imagine that the judge walks into that courtroom and says that she's been talking to the defendant. And at the defendant's request, the judge has agreed not to let the prosecution call any witnesses or introduce any documents. The judge and the defendant have agreed that the prosecutor may only read to the jury the dry transcripts of the grand jury proceedings. That's it. Has anyone on jury duty in this country ever heard a judge describe such a proceeding and call it a fair trial? Of course not. That's not a fair trial. It's a mockery of a trial. Under the Constitution, this proceeding, the one we are in right now, is the trial. This is not the appeal from a trial. You are not appellate court judges. Okay, one of you is. And unless this trial is going to be different from every other impeachment trial or any other kind of trial for that matter, you must allow the prosecution and defense, the House manager and the president's lawyers, to call relevant witnesses. You must subpoena documents that the president has blocked, but which bear on his guilt or innocence. You must impartially do justice as your oath requires. So what does a fair trial look like in the context of impeachment? The short answer is it looks like every other trial. First, the resolution should allow the House managers to obtain documents that have been withheld. First, not last, because the documents will inform the decision about which witnesses are most important to call. And when the witnesses are called, the documentary evidence will be available and must be available to question them with. Any other order makes no sense. Next, the resolution should allow the House managers to call their witnesses. And then the president should be allowed to do the same and any rebuttal witnesses. And when the evidentiary portion of the trial ends, the parties argue the case. You deliberate and render a verdict. If there's a dispute as to whether a particular witness is relevant or material to the charges brought, under the Senate rules, the Chief Justice would rule on the issue of materiality. Why should this trial be different than any other trial? The short answer is it shouldn't. But Leader McConnell's resolution would turn the trial process on its head. His resolution requires the House to prove its case without witnesses, without documents, and only after it's done will such questions be entertained, with no guarantee that any witnesses or any documents will be allowed even then. That process makes no sense. So what is the harm of waiting until the end of the trial, of kicking the can down the road on the question of documents and witnesses? Besides the fact it's completely backwards, trial first, then evidence, besides the fact that the documents would inform the decision on which witnesses and help in their questioning, the harm is this. You will not have any of the evidence the president continues to conceal throughout most or all of the trial. And although the evidence against the president is already overwhelming, you may never know the full scope of the president's misconduct or those around him. And neither will the American people. The charges here involve the sacrifice of our national security at home and abroad, and a threat to the integrity of the next election. If there are additional remedial steps that need to be taken after the president's conviction, the American people must know about it. But if, as a public already jaded by experience has come to suspect, this resolution is merely the first step of an effort orchestrated by the White House to rush the trial, hide the evidence, and render a fast verdict, or worse, a fast dismissal, to make the president go away as quickly as possible to cover up his misdeeds, then the American people will be deprived of a fair trial and may never learn just how deep the corruption of this administration goes or what other risks to our security and elections remain hidden. The harm will also endure for this body. If the Senate allows the president to get away with such extensive obstruction, it will affect the Senate's power of subpoena and oversight just as much as the House. The Senate's ability to conduct oversight will be beholden to the desires of this president and future presidents, whether he or she decides they want to cooperate with a Senate investigation or another impeachment inquiry and trial. Our system of checks and balances will be broken. Presidents will become accountable to no one. Now, it has been reported that Leader McConnell has already got the votes to pass this resolution, the text of which we did not see until last night and which has been changed even moments ago. And they say that Leader McConnell is a very good vote counter. Nonetheless, I hope that he's wrong. And not just because I think this process, the process contemplated by this resolution, is backwards and designed with the result in mind, and that the result is not a fair trial. I hope that he's wrong because whatever senators may have said or pledged or committed has been superseded by an event of constitutional dimension. You have all now sworn an oath. Not to each other, not to your legislative leadership, not to the managers or even to the Chief Justice. You have sworn an oath to do impartial justice. That oath binds you. That oath supersedes all else. Many of you in the Senate and many of us in the House have made statements about the president's conduct, or this trial, or this motion, or expectations. None of that matters now. That is all in the past. Nothing matters now but the oath to do impartial justice. And that oath requires a fair trial, fair to the president and fair to the American people. But is that really possible? Or as the founders feared, has factionalism or an excess of partisanship made that now impossible? One way to find out what a fair trial should look like, devoid of partisan consideration, is to ask yourselves, how would you structure the trial if you didn't know what your party was? And you didn't know what the party of the president was? Would it make sense to you to have the trial first and then decide on witnesses and evidence later? Would that be fair to both sides? I have to think that your answer would be no. Let me be blunt. Let me be very blunt. Right now, a great many, perhaps even most Americans, do not believe there will be a fair trial. They don't believe that the Senate will be impartial. They believe that the result is pre-cooked. The president will be acquitted. Not because he is innocent. He is not. But because the senators will vote by party and he has the votes. The votes to prevent the evidence from coming out. The votes to make sure the public never sees it. The American people want a fair trial. They want to believe their system of government is still capable of rising to the occasion. They want to believe that we can rise above party and do what's best for the country, but a great many Americans don't believe that will happen. Let's prove them wrong. Let's prove them wrong. How? By convicting the president? No. Not by conviction alone. By convicting him if the House proves its case, and only if the House proves its case, but by letting the House prove its case, by letting the House call witnesses, by letting the House obtain documents, by letting the House decide how to present its own case, and not deciding it for us. In sum, by agreeing to a fair trial. Now let's turn to the precise terms of the resolution, the history of impeachment trials, and what fairness and impartiality require. Although we have many concerns about the resolution, I will begin with its single biggest flaw. The resolution does not ensure that subpoenas will, in fact, be issued for additional evidence that the Senate and the American people should have, and that the president continues to block to fairly decide the president's guilt or innocence. Moreover, it guarantees that subpoenas will not be issued now, when they would be most valuable to the Senate, the parties, and the American people. According to the resolution the leader has introduced, first, the Senate receives briefs and filings from the parties. Next, it hears lengthy presentations from the House and the president. Now, my colleagues, the president's lawyers, have described this as opening statements. But let's not kid ourselves. That is the trial that they contemplate. The opening statements are the trial. They'll either be most of the trial or they'll be all the trial. If the Senate votes to deprive itself of witnesses and documents, the opening statements will be the end of the trial. So to say, let's just have the opening statements and then we'll see, means let's have the trial. And maybe we can just sweep this all under the rug. So you'll hear these lengthy presentations from the House. There will be a question and answer period for the senators. And then, and only then, after essentially the trial is over, after the briefs have been filed, after the arguments have been made, after the senators exhaust all their questions, only then will the Senate consider whether to subpoena crucial documents and witness testimony that the president has desperately tried to conceal from this Congress and the American people. Documents and witness testimony that, unlike the Clinton trial, have not yet been seen or heard. It is true that the record compiled by the House is overwhelming. It is true the record already compels the conviction of the president. In the face of unprecedented resistance by the president, the House assembled a powerful case, evidence of the president's high crimes and misdemeanors that includes direct evidence and testimony of officials who were unwilling and unwitting in this scheme and saw it for what it was. Yet there is still more evidence, relative and probative evidence, that the president continues to block, that would flesh out the full extent of the president's misconduct and those around him. We have seen that over the past few weeks, new evidence has continued to come to light, as the Nonpartisan Government Accountability Office has determined that the hold on military to Ukraine was illegal and broke the law. As John Bolton has offered to testify in the trial, as one of the president's agents, Lev Parnas, has produced documentary evidence that clarifies Mr. Giuliani's activities on behalf of the president and corroborates Ambassador Sondland's testimony that everyone was in the loop. As documents released under the Freedom of Information Act have documented the alarm at the Department of Defense while the president illegally withheld military support for Ukraine, an ally at war with Russia, without explanation. As a senior Office of Management and Budget official, Michael Duffy instructed Defense Department officials on July 25th, 90 minutes after President Trump spoke by phone with President Zelensky, the Defense Department should pause all obligation of Ukraine military assistance under its purview. 90 minutes after that call. Duffy added, quote, "Given the sensitive nature of the request, I appreciate your keeping that information closely held to those who need to know to execute the direction." Although the evidence is already more than sufficient to convict, there is simply no rational basis for the Senate to deprive itself of all relevant information in making such a hugely consequential judgment. Moreover, as the president's answer to his summons and his trial brief make clear, the president now attempts to contest the facts, albeit in false and misleading ways. But the president should not have it both ways. He should not be permitted to claim that the facts uncovered by the House are wrong, while also concealing mountains of evidence that bear precisely on those facts. If this body seeks impartial justice, it should ensure that subpoenas are issued and that they are issued now, before the Senate begins extended proceedings based on a record that every person in this room and every American watching at home knows does not include documents and witness testimony. It should, because the president would not allow it to be so. Complying with these subpoenas would not impose a burden. The subpoenas cover narrowly tailored and targeted documents and witnesses that the president has concealed. The Senate deserves to see the documents from the White House, the State Department, the Office of Management and Budget, the Department of Defense. These agencies already should have collected and at least preserved these documents in response to House subpoenas. Indeed, in some cases, agencies have already produced documents in FOIA lawsuits, albeit in heavily redacted form. And witnesses with direct knowledge or involvement should be heard. That includes the president's acting chief of staff, Mick Mulvaney, his former national security advisor, John Bolton, who has publicly offered to testify, two senior officials integral to implementing the president's freeze on Ukraine's military aid also have very relevant testimony. Why not hear it? Robert Blair, who serves as Mulvaney's senior advisor, Michael Duffy, a senior official at OMB, and other witnesses with direct knowledge that we reserve the right to call later, but these witnesses with whom we wish to begin the trial. Last month, President Trump made clear that he supported having senior officials testify before the Senate during his trial, declaring that he would love to have Secretary Pompeo, Mr. Mulvaney, now former Secretary Perry, and, quote, many other people testify in the Senate trial.
So, when it's fair in the Senate, I would love to have Mike Pompeo. I'd love to have Mitch. I'd love to have Rick Perry and many other people testify.
The Senate has an opportunity to take the president up on his offer to make his senior aides available, including Mr. Mulvaney and Secretaries Perry and Pompeo. But now the president is changing his tune. The bluster of wanting these witnesses to testify is over. Notwithstanding the fact that he has never asserted a claim of privilege during the course of the House impeachment proceedings, he threatens to invoke one now in a last-ditch effort to keep the rest of the truth from coming out. The president sends his lawyers here to breathlessly claim that these witnesses or others cannot possibly testify because it involves national security. Never mind that it was the president's actions in withholding military aid from an ally at war that threatened our national security in the first place. Never mind that the most impeachable serious offenses will always involve national security because they will involve other nations, and that misconduct based on foreign entanglement was what the framers feared most. The president's absurdist argument amounts to this: we must endanger national security to protect national security. We must make a president's conduct threatening our security beyond the reach of impeachment power if we are to save the presidency. This is dangerous nonsense. As justices of the Supreme Court have underscored, the Constitution is not a suicide pact. But let us turn from the abstract to the very concrete, and let me show you just one example of what the president is hiding in the name of national security. There is a document which the president has refused to turn over, in which his top diplomat in Ukraine says to two other appointees of the president, "As I said on the phone, I think it's crazy to withhold security assistance for help with a political campaign." The administration refuses to turn over that document and so many more. We only know about its existence. We have only seen its contents because it was turned over by a cooperating witness. This is what the president would hide from you and from the American people. In the name of national security, he would hide graphic evidence of his dangerous misconduct. The only question is, and it is the question raised by this resolution, will you let him? Last year, President Trump said that Article 2 of the Constitution will allow him to do anything he wanted. And evidently believing that Article 2 empowered him to denigrate and defy a co-equal branch of government, he also declared that he will fight all subpoenas. Let's hear the president's own words.
"Then I have an Article 2 where I have the right to do whatever I want as president.
But we're fighting all the subpoenas."
True to his pledge to obstruct Congress, when President Trump faced an impeachment inquiry in the House of Representatives, he ordered the executive branch to defy every single request on every single subpoena. He issued this order through his White House counsel, Pat Cipollone, on October 8, the same counsel that stood before you a moment ago to defend the president's misconduct. He then affirmed it again at a rally on October 10. Following President Trump's categorical order, we never received key documents and communications. It is important to note, in refusing to respond to Congress, the president did not make any formal claim of privilege ever. Instead, Mr. Cipollone's letter stated, in effect, that the president would withhold all evidence in the executive branch unless the House surrendered to demands that would effectively place President Trump in charge of the inquiry into his own misconduct. Needless to say, that was a non-starter and designed to be so. The president was determined to obstruct Congress no matter what we did. And his conduct since, his attacks on the impeachment inquiry, his attacks on witnesses, have affirmed that the president never had any intention to cooperate under any circumstance. And why? Because the evidence and testimony he conceals would only further prove his guilt. The innocent do not act this way. Simply stated, this trial should not reward the president's obstruction by allowing him to control what evidence is seen and when it is seen and what evidence will remain hidden. The documents the president seeks to conceal include White House records, including records about the president's unlawful hold on military aid, State Department records, including text messages and WhatsApp messages exchanged by the State Department and Ukrainian officials, and notes to file written by career professionals as they saw the president's scheme unfold in real time. OMB records demonstrating efforts to fabricate an after-the-fact rationale for the president's orders and showing internal objections that the president's orders violated the law. Defense Department records reflecting bafflement and alarm that the president suspended military aid to a key security partner without explanation. Many of the president's aides have also followed his orders and refused to testify. These include central figures in the impeachment inquiry, including White House Chief of Staff Mick Mulvaney, former National Security Advisor John Bolton, and many others with relevant testimony, like Robert Blair and Michael Duffy. Mr. Blair, who serves as a senior advisor to Acting Chief of Staff Mulvaney, worked directly with Mr. Duffy, a political appointee in the Office of Management and Budget, to carry out the president's order to freeze vital military and security assistance to Ukraine. The Trump administration has refused to disclose their communications, even though we know from written testimony, public reporting, and even Freedom of Information Act lawsuits that they were instrumental in implementing the hold and extending it at the president's express direction, even even as career officials warned accurately that doing so would violate the law. The president has also